With two members of the family reading and writing, there was no need for the rest of them to learn. Papa needed them at home. "Miss Mayella," said Atticus in spite of himself, "a 19-year-old girl like you must have friends. Who are your friends?" The witness frowned as if puzzled. "Friends?" "Yes. Don't you know anyone near your age, or older, or younger? Boys and girls? Just ordinary friends?" Mayella's hostility, which had subsided to grudging neutrality, flared again. "You making fun of me again, Mr. Finch?" Atticus let her question answer his. "Do you love your father, Miss Mayella?" was his next.
"Love him? What you mean?"
"I mean, is he good to you? Is he easy to get along with?"
"He does tolerable, except when..."
"Except when?" Mayella looked at her father, who was sitting with his chair tipped against the railing. He sat up straight and waited for her to answer.
"Except when nothing," said Mayella. "I said he does tolerable."
Mr. Yule leaned back again. "Except when he's drinking?" asked Atticus so gently that Mayella nodded. "Does he ever go after you?"
"How you mean?"
"When he's riled, has he ever beaten you?" Mayella looked around, down at the court reporter, up at the judge.
"Answer the question, Miss Mayella," said Judge Taylor.
"My paw's never touched a hair on my head in my life," she declared firmly. "He never touched me."
Atticus's glasses had slipped a little, and he pushed them up on his nose.
"We've had a good visit, Miss Mayella. And now I guess we'd better get to the case. You say you asked Tom Robinson to come chop up a... what was it? A shiffer rope? A whole dresser full of drawers on one side. Was Tom Robinson well known to you?"
"What do you mean?"
"I mean, did you know who he was? Where he lived?"
Mayella nodded.
"I knowed who he was. He passed the house every day."
"Was this the first time you asked him to come inside the fence?"
Mayella jumped slightly at the question. Atticus was making his slow pilgrimage to the windows, as he had been doing. He would ask a question, then look out, waiting for an answer. He did not see her involuntary jump, but it seemed to me that he knew she had moved. He turned around and raised his eyebrows.
"Was," he began again.
"Yes, it was."
"Didn't you ever ask him to come inside the fence before?"
She was prepared now.
"I did not. I certainly did not."
"One did not's enough," said Atticus serenely. "You never asked him to do odd jobs for you before?"
"I might have," conceded Mayella. "There was several niggers around."
"Can you remember any other occasions?"
"No."
"All right. Now to what happened. You said Tom Robinson was behind you in the room when you turned around. That right?"
"Yes."
"You said he got you around the neck, cussing and saying dirt. Is that right?"
"It's right."
Atticus's memory had suddenly become accurate.
"You say he caught me and choked me and took advantage of me. Is that right?"
"That's what I said."
"Do you remember him beating you about the face?"
The witness hesitated.
"You seem sure enough that he choked you. All this time you were fighting back, remember? You kicked and hollered as loud as you could. Do you remember him beating you about the face?"
Mayella was silent. She seemed to be trying to get something clear to herself. I thought for a moment she was doing Mr. Heck Tate's and my trick of pretending there was a person in front of us. She glanced at Mr. Gilmer. "It's an easy question, Miss Mayella, so I'll try again. Do you remember him beating you about the face?" Atticus's voice had lost its comfortableness. He was speaking in his arid, detached, professional voice. "Do you remember him beating you about the face?" "No, I don't recollect if he hit me. I mean, yes, I do. He hit me." "Was your last sentence your answer?"
"Huh? Yes, he hit. I just don't remember. I just don't remember. It all happened so quick."
Judge Taylor looked sternly at Mayella. "Don't you cry, young woman," he began. But Atticus said, "Let her cry if she wants to, Judge. We've got all the time in the world." Mayella sniffed wrathfully and looked at Atticus.
"I'll answer any question you got. Get me up here and mock me, will you? I'll answer any question you got."
"That's fine," said Atticus. "There are only a few more. Miss Mayella, not to be tedious, you've testified that the defendant hit you, grabbed you around the neck, choked you, and took advantage of you. I want you to be sure you have the right man. Will you identify the man who raped you?"
"I will. That's him, right yonder."
Atticus turned to the defendant. "Tom, stand up. Let Miss Mayella have a good long look at you. Is this the man, Miss Mayella?" Tom Robinson's powerful shoulders rippled under his thin shirt. He rose to his feet and stood with his right hand on the back of his chair. He looked oddly off balance, but it was not from the way he was standing. His left arm was fully 12 inches shorter than his right, and hung dead at his side. It ended in a small, shriveled hand, and from as far away as the balcony, I could see that it was no use to him.
"Scout," breathed Jem. "Scout, look! Reverend, he's crippled!"
Reverend Sykes leaned across me and whispered to Jem, "He got it caught in a cotton gin. Caught it in Mr. Dolphus Raymond's cotton gin when he was a boy. Like to bled to death. Tore all the muscles loose from his bones."
Atticus said, "Is this the man who raped you?"
"It most certainly is."
Atticus's next question was one word long. "How?" Mayella was raging.
"I don't know how he done it, but he done it. I said it all happened so fast, I..."
"Now let's consider this calmly," began Atticus, but Mr. Gilmer interrupted with an objection. He was not irrelevant or immaterial, but Atticus was browbeating the witness. Judge Taylor laughed outright.
"Oh, sit down, Horace. He's doing nothing of the sort. If anything, the witness is browbeating Atticus."
Judge Taylor was the only person in the courtroom who laughed. Even the babies were still, and I suddenly wondered if they had been smothered at their mother's breasts.
This ends Disc 7. To Kill a Mockingbird, Disc 8.
"Now," said Atticus, "Miss Mayella, you've testified that the defendant choked and beat you. You didn't say that he sneaked up behind you and knocked you cold, but you turned around, and there he was." Atticus was back behind his table, and he emphasized his words by rapping his knuckles on it. "Do you wish to reconsider any of your testimony?"
"You want me to say something that didn't happen?"
"No, ma'am. I want you to say something that did happen. Tell us once more, please, what happened."
"I told you what happened."
"You testified that you turned around and there he was.
He choked you then? Yes. Then he released your throat and hit you?
I said he did.
He blacked your right eye with his right fist?
I ducked, and it glanced. That's what it did. I ducked, and it glanced off.
Mayella had finally seen the light.
You're becoming suddenly clear on this point. A while ago, you couldn't remember too well, could you?
I said he hit me.
All right. He choked you. He hit you. Then he raped you. That right?
It most certainly is.
You're a strong girl. What were you doing all the time? Just standing there?
I told you, I hollered and kicked and fought.
Atticus reached up and took off his glasses, turned his good right eye to the witness, and rained questions on her. Judge Taylor said, "One question at a time, Atticus. Give the witness a chance to answer."
All right. Why didn't you run?
I tried to.
Tried to? What kept you from it?
He slung me down. That's what he did. He slung me down and got on top of me.
You were screaming all this time?
I certainly was.
Then why didn't the other children hear you? Where were they? At the dump? No answer. Where were they? Why didn't your screams make them come running? The dump's closer than the woods, isn't it? No answer. Or didn't you scream until you saw your father in the window? You didn't think to scream until then, did you? No answer. Did you scream first at your father instead of at Tom Robinson? Was that it? No answer. Who beat you up, Tom Robinson or your father? No answer. What did your father see in the window? The crime of rape or the best defense to it? Why don't you tell the truth, child? Didn't Bob Ewell beat you up? When Atticus turned away from Mayella, he looked like his stomach hurt. But Mayella's face was a mixture of terror and fury. Atticus sat down wearily and polished his glasses with his handkerchief. Suddenly, Mayella became articulate.
"I got something to say," she said.
Atticus raised his head. "Do you want to tell us what happened?" But she did not hear the compassion in his invitation.
"I got something to say, and then I ain't going to say no more. That nigger yonder took advantage of me. And if you fine fancy gentlemen don't want to do nothing about it, then you're all yellow stinking cowards. Stinking cowards, the lot of you. Your fancy airs don't come to nothing. Your mamming and Miss Mayellerin don't come to nothing, Mr. Finch."
Then she burst into real tears. Her shoulders shook with angry sobs. She was as good as her word. She answered no more questions, even when Mr. Gilmer tried to get her back on the track. I guess if she hadn't been so poor and ignorant, Judge Taylor would have put her under the jail for the contempt she had shown everybody in the courtroom. Somehow Atticus had hit her hard in a way that was not clear to me, but it gave him no pleasure to do so. He sat with his head down, and I never saw anybody glare at anyone with the hatred Mayella showed when she left the stand and walked by Atticus's table. When Mr. Gilmer told Judge Taylor that the state rested, Judge Taylor said, "It's time we all did. We'll take 10 minutes. Atticus and Mr. Gilmer met in front of the bench and whispered. Then they left the courtroom by a door behind the witness stand, which was a signal for us all to stretch.
I discovered that I had been sitting on the edge of the long bench, and I was somewhat numb. Jem got up and yawned. Dill did likewise, and Reverend Sykes wiped his face on his hat. The temperature was an easy 90, he said. Mr. Braxton Underwood, who had been sitting quietly in a chair reserved for the press, soaking up testimony with his sponge of a brain, allowed his bitter eyes to rove over the colored balcony, and they met mine. He gave a snort and looked away. "Jem," I said, "Mr. Underwood's seen us." "That's okay. He won't tell Atticus. He'll just put it on the social side of the Tribune." Jem turned back to Dill, explaining, I suppose, the finer points of the trial to him, but I wondered what they were. There had been no lengthy debates between Atticus and Mr. Gilmer on any points. Mr. Gilmer seemed to be prosecuting almost reluctantly. Witnesses had been led by the nose as asses are, with few objections. But Atticus had once told us that in Judge Taylor's court, any lawyer who was a strict constructionist on evidence usually wound up receiving strict instructions from the bench. He distilled this for me to mean that Judge Taylor might look lazy and operate in his sleep, but he was seldom reversed, and that was the proof of the pudding. Atticus said he was a good judge. Presently Judge Taylor returned and climbed into his swivel chair. He took a cigar from his vest pocket and examined it thoughtfully. I punched Dill. Having passed the judge's inspection, the cigar suffered a vicious bite. "We come down sometimes to watch him," I explained. "It's going to take him the rest of the afternoon now. You watch." Unaware of public scrutiny from above, Judge Taylor disposed of the severed end by propelling it expertly to his lips and saying, "Flup!" He hit a spittoon so squarely we could hear it slosh. "Bet he was hell with a spitball," murmured Dill. As a rule, a recess meant a general exodus, but today people weren't moving. Even the idlers who had failed to shame younger men from their seats had remained standing along the walls. I guess Mr. Heck Tate had reserved the county toilet for court officials. Atticus and Mr. Gilmer returned, and Judge Taylor looked at his watch. "It's getting on to 4, he said, which was intriguing, as the courthouse clock must have struck the hour at least twice. I had not heard it, or felt its vibrations. "Shall we try to wind up this afternoon?" asked Judge Taylor. "How about it, Atticus?" "I think we can," said Atticus. "How many witnesses you got?"
"1.
"Well, call him." Chapter 19. Thomas Robinson reached around, ran his fingers under his left arm, and lifted it. He guided his arm to the Bible, and his rubber-like left hand sought contact with the black binding. As he raised his right hand, the useless one slipped off the Bible and hit the clerk's table. He was trying again when Judge Taylor growled, "That'll do, Tom." Tom took the oath and stepped into the witness chair. Atticus very quickly induced him to tell us Tom was 25 years of age. He was married with 3 children. He had been in trouble with the law before. He once received 30 days for disorderly conduct.
"It must have been disorderly," said Atticus.
"What did it consist of?"
"Got in a fight with another man. He tried to cut me."
"Did he succeed?"
"Yes, sir.
A little. Not enough to hurt.
You see, I..." Tom moved his left shoulder.
"Yes," said Atticus. "You were both convicted?"
"Yes, sir."
"I had to serve 'cause I couldn't pay the fine. Other fella paid his'n." Dill leaned across me and asked Jem what Atticus was doing. Jem said Atticus was showing the jury that Tom had nothing to hide.
"Were you acquainted with Mayella Violet Yule?" asked Atticus.
"Yes, sir. I had to pass her place going to and from the field every day."
"Whose field?"
"I picks for Mr. Link Diaz."
"Were you picking cotton in November?"
"No, sir. I works in his yard fall and winter time. I works pretty steady for him all year round. He's got a lot of pecan trees and things."
"You say you had to pass the Yule place to get to and from work.
Is there any other way to go?"
"No, sir. None's I know of."
"Tom, did she ever speak to you?"
"Why, yes, sir. I'd tip my hat when I'd go by, and one day she asked me to come inside the fence and bust up a chifferobe for her."
"When did she ask you to chop up the chifferobe?"
"Mr. Finch, it was way last spring. I remember it because it was chopping time, and I had my hoe with me. I said I didn't have nothing but this hoe, but she said she had a hatchet. She give me the hatchet, and I broke up the chifferobe. She said, 'I reckon I'll have to give you a nickel, won't I?' And I said, 'No, ma'am, there ain't no charge.' Then I went home. Mr. Finch, that was way last spring, way over a year ago."
"Did you ever go on the place again?"
"Yes, sir."
"When?"
"Well, I went lots of times."
Judge Taylor instinctively reached for his gavel, but let his hand fall. The murmur below us died without his help.
"Under what circumstances?"
"Please, sir?"
"Why did you go inside the fence lots of times?"
Tom Robinson's forehead relaxed.
"She'd call me in, sir. Seemed like every time I passed by yonder, she'd have some little something for me to do. Chopping, kindling, toting water for her. She watered them red flowers every day."
"Were you paid for your services?"
"No, sir. Not after she offered me a nickel the first time. I was glad to do it. Mr. Yule didn't seem to help her none, and neither did the chillen, and I knowed she didn't have no nickels to spare."
"Where were the other children?"
"They was always around, all over the place. They'd watch me work, some of 'em. Some of 'em had sat in the window."
"Would Miss Mayella talk to you?"
"Yes, sir. She talked to me."
As Tom Robinson gave his testimony, it came to me that Mayella Yule must have been the loneliest person in the world. She was even lonelier than Boo Radley, who had not been out of the house in 25 years. When Atticus asked, "Had she any friends?" she seemed not to know what he meant. Then she thought he was making fun of her. She was as sad, I thought, as what Jem called a mixed child. White people wouldn't have anything to do with her because she lived among pigs. Negroes wouldn't have anything to do with her because she was white. She couldn't live like Mr. Dolphus Raymond, who preferred the company of Negroes, because she didn't own a river bank, and she wasn't from a fine old family. Nobody said, "That's just their way," about the Yules. Maycomb gave them Christmas baskets, welfare money, and the back of its hand. Tom Robinson was probably the only person who was ever decent to her. But she said he took advantage of her. And when she stood up, she looked at him as if he were dirt beneath her feet.
"Did you ever," Atticus interrupted my meditations, "at any time, go on the Yule property? Did
Did you ever set foot on the Yule property without an express invitation from one of them?
No, sir, Mr. Finch. I never did. I wouldn't do that, sir.
Atticus sometimes said that one way to tell whether a witness was lying or telling the truth was to listen rather than watch. I applied his test. Tom denied it 3 times in 1 breath, but quietly, with no hint of whining in his voice, and I found myself believing him in spite of his protesting too much. He seemed to be a respectable Negro, and a respectable Negro would never go up into somebody's yard of his own volition. Tom, what happened to you on the evening of November 21st of last year? Below us, the spectators drew a collective breath and leaned forward. Behind us, the Negroes did the same. Tom was a black velvet Negro, not shiny, but soft black velvet. The whites of his eyes shone in his face, and when he spoke, we saw flashes of his teeth. If he had been whole, he would have been a fine specimen of a man. "Mr. Finch," he said, "I was going home as usual that evening, and when I passed the Yule place, Miss Mayella were on the porch, like she said she were. It seemed real quiet-like, and I didn't quite know why. I was studying why, just passing by, when she says for me to come there and help her a minute. Well, I went inside the fence and looked around for some kindling to work on, but I didn't see none. And she says, 'No, I got something for you to do in the house. The old door's off its hinges, and fall's coming on pretty fast.' I said, 'You got a screwdriver, Miss Mayella?' She said she sure had. Well, I went up the steps, and she motioned me to come inside, and I went in the front room and looked at the door. I said, 'Miss Mayella, this door look all right.' I pulled it back and forth, and those hinges was all right. Then she shut the door in my face. 'Mr. Finch, I was wondering why it was so quiet-like, and it come to me that there weren't a child on the place, not a one of 'em. And I said, "Miss Mayella, where the chillen?"
Tom's black velvet skin had begun to shine, and he ran his hand over his face.
"I say, where the chillen?" he continued. "And she says, she was laughing, sort of. She says, they all gone to town to get ice creams. She says, took me a slap year to save 7 nickels, but I done it. They all gone to town."
Tom's discomfort was not from the humidity.
"What did you say then, Tom?" asked Atticus.
"I said something like, 'Why, Miss Mayella, that's right smart of you to treat 'em.' And she said, 'You think so?' I don't think she understood what I was thinking. I meant it was smart of her to save like that, and nice of her to treat 'em."
"I understand you, Tom. Go on," said Atticus.
"Well, I said I'd best be going. I couldn't do nothing for her. And she says, 'Oh, yes, I could.' And I ask her what. And she says to just step on that chair yonder and get that box down from on top of the chiffarobe."
"Not the same chiffarobe you busted up?" asked Atticus.
The witness smiled.
"No, sir, another one. Most as tall as the room. So I done what she told me, and I was just reaching, when the next thing I knows, she'd grabbed me round the legs. Grabbed me round the legs, Mr. Finch.
She scared me so bad, I hopped down and turned the chair over. That was the only thing, only furniture, disturbed in that room, Mr. Finch, when I left it. I swear for God.
What happened after you turned the chair over? Tom Robinson had come to a dead stop. He glanced at Atticus, then at the jury, then at Mr. Underwood, sitting across the room.
Tom, you're sworn to tell the whole truth. Will you tell it?
Tom ran his hand nervously over his mouth.
What happened after that?
Answer the question, said Judge Taylor. One third of his cigar had vanished.
Mr. Finch, I got down off of that chair and turned around, and she sort of jumped on me.
Jumped on you? Violently?
No, sir. She hugged me. She hugged me round the waist.
This time Judge Taylor's gavel came down with a bang, and as it did, the overhead lights went on in the courtroom. Darkness had not come, but the afternoon sun had left the windows. Judge Taylor quickly restored order.
Then what did she do?
The witness swallowed hard.
She reached up and kissed me side of the face. She says she never kissed a grown man before, and she might as well kiss a nigger. She says what her papa do to her don't count. She says, kiss me back, nigger. I say, Miss Mayella, let me out of here, and tried to run, but she got her back to the door, and I'd have had to push her. I didn't want to harm her, Mr. Finch, and I say, let me pass. But just when I say it, Mr. Yule yonder hollered through the window.
What did he say? Tom Robinson swallowed again, and his eyes widened.
Something not fitting to say. Not fitting for these folks and chillin' to hear.
What did he say, Tom? You must tell the jury what he said. Tom Robinson shut his eyes tight.
He says, you goddamn whore, I'll kill you.
Then what happened?
Mr. Finch, I was running so fast, I didn't know what happened.
Tom, did you rape Mayella Ewell?
I did not, sir.
Did you harm her in any way?
I did not, sir.
Did you resist her advances?
Mr. Finch, I tried. I tried to without being ugly to her. I didn't want to be ugly. I didn't want to push her or nothing.
It occurred to me that in their own way, Tom Robinson's manners were as good as Atticus's. Until my father explained it to me later, I did not understand the subtlety of Tom's predicament. He would not have dared strike a white woman under any circumstances and expect to live long. So he took the first opportunity to run, a sure sign of guilt.
Tom, go back once more to Mr. Yule, said Atticus. Did he say anything to you?
Not anything, sir. He might have said something, but I weren't there.
That'll do,
Atticus cut in sharply.
What you did hear, who was he talking to?
Mr. Finch, he were talking and looking at Miss Mayella.
Then you ran?
I sure did, sir.
Why did you run?
I was scared, sir.
Why were you scared?
Mr. Finch, if you was a nigger like me, you'd be scared, too.
Atticus sat down. Mr. Gilmer was making his way to the witness stand. But before he got there, Mr. Link Dias rose from the audience and announced,
I just want the whole lot of you to know one thing right now. That boy's worked for me 8 years, and I ain't had a speck of trouble out of him. Not a speck. Shut your mouth, sir!
Judge Taylor was wide awake and roaring. He was also pink in the face. His speech was miraculously unimpaired by his cigar.
Link Diaz, he yelled. If you have anything you want to say, you can say it under oath and at the proper time. But until then, you get out of this room, you hear me? Get out of this room, sir, you hear me? I'll be damned if I listen to this case again.
Judge Taylor looked daggers at Atticus as if daring him to speak. But Atticus had ducked his head and was laughing into his lap. I remembered something he had said about Judge Taylor's ex-cathedra remarks, sometimes exceeding his duty, but that few lawyers ever did anything about them. I looked at Jem, but Jem shook his head. "It ain't like one of the jurymen got up and started talking," he said. "I think it'd be different then. Mr. Link was just disturbing the peace or something." Judge Taylor told the reporter to expunge anything he happened to have written down after, "Mr. Finch, if you were a nigger like me, you'd be scared too," and told the jury to disregard the interruption. He looked suspiciously down the middle aisle and waited, I suppose, for Mr. Link Diaz to effect total departure. Then he said, "Go ahead, Mr. Gilmer. You were given 30 days once for disorderly conduct, Robinson?" asked Mr. Gilmer. "Yes, sir." "What did the nigger look like when you got through with him?"
"He beat me, Mr. Gilmer."
"Yes, but you were convicted, weren't you?" Atticus raised his head. "It was a misdemeanor, and it's in the record, Judge." I thought he sounded tired.
"Witness'll answer, though," said Judge Taylor, just as wearily.
"Yes, sir. I got 30 days.
I knew that Mr. Gilmer would sincerely tell the jury that anyone who was convicted of disorderly conduct could easily have had it in his heart to take advantage of Mayella Yule. That was the only reason he cared. Reasons like that helped.
"Robinson, you're pretty good at busting up chiffarobes and kindling with one hand, aren't you?"
"Yes, sir. I reckon so."
"Strong enough to choke the breath out of a woman and sling her to the floor?"
"I never done that, sir."
"But you are strong enough to?"
"I reckon so, sir."
"Had your eye on her a long time, hadn't you, boy?"
"No, sir. I never looked at her."
"Then you were mighty polite to do all that chopping and hauling for her, weren't you, boy?"
"I was just trying to help her out, sir."
"That was mighty generous of you. You had chores at home after your regular work, didn't you?"
"Yes, sir."
"Why didn't you do them instead of Miss Yule's?"
"I done 'em both, sir."
"You must have been pretty busy."
"Why?"
"Why what, sir?" "Why were you so anxious to do that woman's chores?"
Tom Robinson hesitated, searching for an answer.
"Looked like she didn't have nobody to help her, like I says."
"With Mr. Yule and 7 children on the place, boy?"
"Well, I says it looked like they never help her none."
"You did all this chopping and work from sheer goodness, boy?"
"Tried to help her," I says.
Mr. Gilmer smiled grimly at the jury.
"You're a mighty good fellow, it seems. Did all this for not one penny?"
"Yes, sir."
"I felt right sorry for her. She seemed to try more than the rest of them." "You felt sorry for her? You felt sorry for her?"
Mr. Gilmer seemed ready to rise to the ceiling. The witness realized his mistake and shifted uncomfortably in the chair. But the damage was done. Below us, nobody liked Tom Robinson's answer. Mr. Gilmer paused a long time to let it sink in. "Now, you went by the house as usual last November 21st, he said, "and she asked you to come in and bust up a chiffer robe?
No, sir.
Do you deny that you went by the house?
No, sir. She said she had something for me to do inside the house.
She says she asked you to bust up a chiffer robe. Is that right?
No, sir, it ain't.
Then you say she's lying, boy?
Atticus was on his feet, but Tom Robinson didn't need him.
I don't say she's lying, Mr. Gilmer. I say she's mistaken in her mind.
To the next 10 questions, as Mr. Gilmer reviewed Mayella's version of events, the witness's steady answer was that she was mistaken in her mind.
Didn't Mr. Ewell run you off the place, boy?
No, sir. I don't think he did.
Don't think? What do you mean?
I mean I didn't stay long enough for him to run me off.
You're very candid about this. Why did you run so fast?
I says I was scared, sir.
If you had a clear conscience, why were you scared?
Like I says before, it weren't safe for any nigger to be in a fix like that.
But you weren't in a fix. You testified that you were resisting Miss Ewell. Were you so scared that she'd hurt you, you ran? A big buck like you?
No, sir. I scared I'd be in court, just like I am now.
Scared of arrest? Scared you'd have to face up to what you did?
No, sir. Scared I'd have to face up to what I didn't do.
Are you being impudent to me, boy?
No, sir. I didn't go to be.
This was as much as I heard of Mr. Gilmer's cross-examination, because Jem made me take Dill out. For some reason, Dill had started crying and couldn't stop. Quietly at first, then his sobs were heard by several people in the balcony. Jem said if I didn't go with him, he'd make me. And Reverend Sykes said I'd better go. So I went. Dill had seemed to be all right that day. Nothing wrong with him. But I guessed he hadn't fully recovered from running away.
Ain't you feeling good? I asked when we reached the bottom of the stairs.
Dill tried to pull himself together as we ran down the south steps. Mr. Link Dias was a lonely figure on the top step.
"Anything happening, Scout?" he asked as we went by.
"No, sir," I answered over my shoulder. "Dill here, he's sick."
"Come on out under the trees," I said. "Heat got you, I expect." We chose the fattest live oak, and we sat under it.
"It was just him I couldn't stand," Dill said.
"Who? Tom?"
"That old Mr. Gilmer. Doing him that away, talking so hateful to him.
Dill, that's his job. Why, if we didn't have prosecutors, well, we couldn't have defense attorneys, I reckon."
Dill exhaled patiently.
"I know all that, Scout. It was the way he said it. It made me sick. Plain sick."
"He's supposed to act that way, Dill. He was cross.
He didn't act that way when..."
"Dill, those were his own witnesses."
"Well, Mr. Finch didn't act that way to Mayella and old man Ewell when he cross-examined them. The way that man called him boy all the time and sneered at him and looked around at the jury every time he answered."
"Well, Dill, after all, he's just a Negro.
I don't care one speck. It ain't right.
Somehow it ain't right to do 'em that way. Hasn't anybody got any business talking like that? It just makes me sick.
That's just Mr. Gilmer's way, Dill. He does 'em all that way. You've never seen him get good and down on one yet. Why, when... Well, today Mr. Gilmer seemed to me like he wasn't half trying. They do 'em all that way. Most lawyers, I mean. Mr. Finch doesn't. He's not an example, Dill. He's... I was trying to grope in my memory for a sharp phrase of Miss Maudie Atkinson's. I had it. He's the same in the courtroom as he is on the public streets. That's not what I mean, said Dill.
I know what you mean, boy, said a voice behind us. We thought it came from the tree trunk, but it belonged to Mr. Dolphus Raymond. He peered around the trunk at us.
You aren't thin-hided. It just makes you sick, doesn't it?
Chapter 20.
Come on round here, son. I got something that'll settle your stomach.
As Mr. Dolphus Raymond was an evil man, I accepted his invitation reluctantly, but I followed Dill. Somehow, I didn't think Atticus would like it if we became friendly with Mr. Raymond, and I knew Aunt Alexandra wouldn't.
Here, he said, offering Dill his paper sack with straws in it. Take a good sip. It'll quieten you.
Dill sucked on the straws, smiled, and pulled at length.
Hee hee, said Mr. Raymond, evidently taking delight in corrupting a child. Dill, you watch out now, I warned.
Dill released the straws and grinned.
Scout, it's nothing but Coca-Cola.
Mr. Raymond sat up against the tree trunk. He had been lying on the grass.
You little folks won't tell on me now, will you? You'd ruin my reputation if you did.
You mean all you drink in that sack's Coca-Cola? Just plain Coca-Cola?
Yes, ma'am,
Mr. Raymond nodded. I liked his smell. It was of leather, horses, cottonseed. He wore the only English riding boots I had ever seen.
That's all I drink, most of the time.
Then you just pretend you're half...
I beg your pardon, sir. I caught myself. I didn't mean to be... Mr. Raymond chuckled, not at all offended, and I tried to frame a discreet question.
Why do you do like you do?
What? Oh, yes. You mean, why do I pretend?
Well, it's very simple, he said. Some folks don't like the way I live. Now, I could say the hell with them. I don't care if they don't like it. I do say I don't care if they don't like it, right enough. But I don't say the hell with them, see?
Dill and I said, no, sir.
I try to give them a reason, you see. It helps folks if they can latch on to a reason. When I come to town, which is seldom, if I weave a little and drink out of this sack, folks can say Dolphus Raymond's in the clutches of whiskey. That's why he won't change his ways. He can't help himself. That's why he lives the way he does.
That ain't honest, Mr. Raymond. Making yourself out badder'n you are already?
It ain't honest, but it's mighty helpful to folks. Secretly, Miss Finch, I'm not much of a drinker. But you see, they could never, never understand that I live like I do because that's the way I want to live.
I had a feeling that I shouldn't be here listening to this sinful man who had mixed children and didn't care who knew it. But he was fascinating. I had never encountered a being who deliberately perpetrated fraud against himself. But why had he entrusted us with his deepest secret? I asked him why.
Because you're children, and you can understand it, he said.
and because I heard that one. He jerked his head at Dill. Things haven't caught up with that one's instinct yet. Let him get a little older, and he won't get sick and cry. Maybe things will strike him as being not quite right, say. But he won't cry. Not when he gets a few years on him.
Cry about what, Mr. Raymond? Dill's maleness was beginning to assert itself.
Cry about the simple hell people give other people without even thinking. Cry about the hell white people give colored folks without even stopping to think that they're people too.
Atticus says cheating a colored man is 10 times worse than cheating a white man, I muttered.
Says it's the worst thing you can do.
Mr. Raymond said, I don't reckon it's... Miss Jean Louise, you don't know your pa's not a run-of-the-mill man. It'll take a few years for that to sink in. You haven't seen enough of the world yet. You haven't even seen this town. But all you gotta do is step back inside the courthouse.
Which reminded me that we were missing nearly all of Mr. Gilmer's cross-examination. I looked at the sun, and it was dropping fast behind the store tops on the west side of the square. Between two fires, I could not decide which I wanted to jump into, Mr. Raymond or the Fifth Judicial Circuit Court.
Come on, Dill, I said. You all right now?
Yeah. Glad to have met you, Mr. Raymond. And thanks for the drink. It was mighty settling.
We raced back to the courthouse, up the steps, up 2 flights of stairs, and edged our way along the balcony rail. Reverend Sykes had saved our seats. The courtroom was still, and again I wondered where the babies were. Judge Taylor's cigar was a brown speck in the center of his mouth. Mr. Gilmer was writing on one of the yellow pads on his table, trying to outdo the court reporter, whose hand was jerking rapidly.
Shoot, I muttered. We missed it.
Atticus was halfway through his speech to the jury. He had evidently pulled some papers from his briefcase that rested beside his chair, because they were on the table. Tom Robinson was toying with them.
Absence of any corroborative evidence, this man was indicted on a capital charge and is now on trial for his life.
I punched Jem.
How long's he been at it?
He's just gone over the evidence,
Jem whispered.
And we're gonna win, Scout. I don't see how we can't. He's been at it about 5 minutes. He made it as plain and easy as, well, as I'd have explained it to you. You could have understood it, even. Did Mr. Gilmer...
Shh! Nothing new. Just the usual. Hush now.
We looked down again. Atticus was speaking easily, with the kind of detachment he used when he dictated a letter. He walked slowly up and down in front of the jury, and the jury seemed to be attentive. Their heads were up, and they followed Atticus's route with what seemed to be appreciation. I guess it was because Atticus wasn't a thunderer. Atticus paused. Then he did something he didn't ordinarily do. He unhitched his watch and chain and placed them on the table, saying, "With the court's permission." Judge Taylor nodded. And then Atticus did something I never saw him do before or since, in public or in private. He unbuttoned his vest, unbuttoned his collar, loosened his tie, and took off his coat. He never loosened a scrap of his clothing until he undressed at bedtime, and to Jem and me, this was the equivalent of him standing before us stark naked. We exchanged horrified glances. Atticus put his hands in his pockets, and as he returned to the jury, I saw his gold collar button and the tips of his pen and pencil winking in the light.
"Gentlemen," he said,
Jem and I again looked at each other. Atticus might have said, "Scout." His voice had lost its aridity, its detachment, and he was talking to the jury as if they were folks on the post office corner. "Gentlemen," he was saying, "I shall be brief, but I would like to use my remaining time with you to remind you that this case is not a difficult one. It requires no minute sifting of complicated facts, but it does require you to be sure beyond all reasonable doubt as to the guilt of the defendant. To begin with, this case should never have come to trial. This case is as simple as black and white. The state has not produced one iota of medical evidence to the effect that the crime Tom Robinson is charged with ever took place. It has relied instead upon the testimony of two witnesses whose evidence has not only been called into serious question on cross-examination, but has been flatly contradicted by the defendant. The defendant is not guilty, but somebody in this courtroom is. I have nothing but pity in my heart for the chief witness for the state, but my pity does not extend so far as to her putting a man's life at stake, which she has done in an effort to get rid of her own guilt. I say guilt, gentlemen, because it was guilt that motivated her. She has committed no crime. She has merely broken a rigid and time-honored code of our society, a code so severe that whoever breaks it is hounded from our midst as unfit to live with. She is the victim of cruel poverty and ignorance, but I cannot pity her. She is white. She knew full well the enormity of her offense, but because her desires were stronger than the code she was breaking, she persisted in breaking it. She persisted, and her subsequent reaction is something that all of us have known at one time or another. She did something every child has done. She tried to put the evidence of her offense away from her. But in this case, she was no child hiding stolen contraband. She struck out at her victim. Of necessity, she must put him away from her. He must be removed from her presence, from this world. She must destroy the evidence of her offense. What was the evidence of her offense? Tom Robinson, a human being. She must put Tom Robinson away from her. Tom Robinson was her daily reminder of what she did. What did she do? She tempted a Negro. She was white, and she tempted a Negro. She did something that in our society is unspeakable. She kissed a black man. Not an old uncle, but a strong, young Negro man. No code mattered to her before she broke it, but it came crashing down on her afterwards. Her father saw it, and the defendant has testified as to his remarks. What did her father do? We don't know, but there is circumstantial evidence to indicate that Mayella Ewell was beaten savagely by someone who led almost exclusively with his left. We do know in part what Mr. Ewell did. He did what any God-fearing, persevering, respectable white man would do under the circumstances. He swore out a warrant, no doubt signing it with his left hand. And Tom Robinson now sits before you, having taken the oath with the only good hand he possesses,
his right hand. And so, a quiet, respectable, humble Negro, who had the unmitigated temerity to feel sorry for a white woman,